Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to the panel discussion. We gave you a little traveling music there because we wanted to get everybody seated. We're, it's a Monday morning. It's a holiday week. We're trying to get everybody in the studio, and we're waiting for Mike Spain. He's stuck in traffic. Alan was finishing up an interview. Teresa's been here for a long time. She was waiting for me. So it's all good.
Well, you're worth waiting for, Charlie.
Well, yeah. No.
I was sitting here about to go doing a show by myself. All right, then.
Well, as I was walking in, Teresa was like, am I hosting today? Did I get that memo? I think I missed that. Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome. It is a Monday. It's a holiday week, and we hope that you are spending time, whether you're getting ready to travel, whether you're getting ready to spend just home time with your family, that we can be a part of that as over the next couple of days we are together and we talk about what's going on in this world of ours. Let me introduce our panel to you. I will start off with Mike Spain because he'll be walking in a moment, and then we'll just say hi to him. But Mike is the associate editor of the Times Union and will be with us momentarily. I will say that traveling the roads that Mike is traveling on, they were really bad this morning.
I know. I came in at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Did you have ice?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There was ice, and I followed behind sanding trucks.
Yeah.
Good plan.
Who were laying out the sand on the thing. The car was wobbling going one way or the other. I didn't know whether that was because of the ice or the wind. I thought it was the wind.
I don't know. I know in our there was a little white dusting on the road, and we didn't think too much of it. And then as we were coming down one of the wonderful hills of Washington County, it was like, dun, 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 you know. So we're like, there's that. So.
I'm not ready for this.
No. Well, Alan Chartok is here. He is ready for the show, though, and we'll get geared up here in a second. Teresa Bourgeois is also with us. She is a communications consultant. We're thrilled to have her here on this Monday, as we do most Mondays. Thank you very much.
Delighted to be here.
And I'm glad you asked me what was up, Joe, because what's up is that on Wednesday night, I'm going to be at the Colonial Theater, because that's where Garrison Keillor is going to be performing. And that'll be fun.
On Thanksgiving Eve.
Yes, I think.
Yeah, I was just, as you're saying that, I'm wondering, I'm just checking that, Alan. Is that next Monday? No, that's that this week?
Yeah, that's what I think. I may be wrong.
What's the name of that theater again?
Colonial. Yeah.
There's been a lot of advertising about it.
Yeah, there sure has.
And Joe Biden's here tonight.
Yeah, Joe Biden is in town tonight, so there you go. A lot going on.
President Biden.
You're right. It's actually next Wednesday.
Oh, it's not this Wednesday?
No.
Boy, am I glad you told me that.
Yeah, it's next Wednesday. It's the 29th.
Oh, because, you know, I had no desire to be on the roads on Thanksgiving Eve, which happens to be, I believe, the most traveled day of the year.
Yes. You don't have to do that.
Oh, Joe, you're wonderful.
Thank you. Well, I didn't really do anything other than be able to read a calendar. But that is it's the 29th. It's Garrison Keillor, Robin, and Linda Williams. And it says right here in the web ad, WAMC Northeast Public Radio welcomes, and Alan will be the welcomer. So there you go. Okay.
That'll be a special event.
Very fun. Very fun. That's next Wednesday, the 29th.
So Garrison Keillor's not spending Thanksgiving in the region.
Although that would be kind of fun, too.
Maybe as a house.
All right. Let's start off with what's happening in the world and what happened over the weekend, and which I think we can safely say was obviously quite a bit. But we'll get started. Beginning with the tax bill, we'll get you all started on that one. Why a firm believer in tax cuts could derail the Senate tax cut plan. This is a story from the New York Times. It tells us about Senator Ron Johnson, who is coming out in opposition to the Senate tax cut plan, laid bare and says the challenges the Republicans face as the measure navigates the rough waters of the Senate. Senator Johnson says that he became the first Senate Republican to say publicly that he could not vote for the Senate's version of the tax bill during a phone call. Mr. Ryan, who had campaigned heavily for Mr. Johnson in 2016, posed an essential question, according to the senator: What are you going to need? What Mr. Johnson needs, he said in an interview from Wisconsin, is for the bill to treat more favorably small businesses and other so-called pass-through entities, businesses whose profits are distributed to their owners and taxed at rates for individuals. Is it unusual for the head of the Congress, even though I understand they're from the same state, to be talking to another senator in their state of what they need in the Senate?
Well, they want to get it through. And Teresa, I wanted to ask you a question because I think a lot of people are having trouble with the definition of pass-through. Perhaps you could help us with that.
I'm not your source on the definition
of pass-through. Well, Joe just said it. Could you do it again, Joe, based on what you just read to us?
I hope so.
Yeah.
These are the small business accounts. Yeah, I'm sorry to say I'm not the expert on that one. I've been trying to understand it myself. Go ahead, Wob.
As the great policy wonk that you are.
I'm weak on tax policy.
I thought I would go to you on that one.
I'm sorry. I'm really weak on tax policy.
Owner-operated pass-throughs. I just have in my heart a real affinity for these owner-operated pass-throughs. We need to make American business competitive. They're not right now, but in making business competitive, we can't leave behind the pass-throughs. And I was looking for...
These are like LLCs and these where you use...
Well,
right?
small business LLCs. And he is a small businessman himself.
Correct.
And thought that that under this bill, the medium size and small businesses were getting screwed, frankly.
They are.
That it was the big guys, the big corporate people who were getting all of the goodies, and he's demanding that the pass-throughs that have been accorded to that should be accorded to the middle range businesses should be allowed. And that is where this is. Now, the problem, as I understand it, is everybody has a problem with the tax bill somewhere. And if they give away the store to everybody like Ron Johnson, they end up with a bill that won't fly or that they can't afford.
The overwhelming majority of businesses in the U.S. are not C corporations subject to the corporate tax. Rather, most businesses, about 95%, are pass-throughs, which have their income passed through to their owners to be taxed under the individual income tax. Pass-through businesses include sole proprietorships, partnerships, and S corporations. And I'm reading this.
And LLCs.
Yes. Of the 26 million businesses in 2014, 95% were pass-throughs. Only 5% were C corporations. And they are not necessarily small businesses, though. A small number of large businesses account for the majority of pass-through profits and economic activity.
So, for instance, I think that Trump business has many, many, many LLCs, individual companies that they set up for individual projects.
Yeah.
But the deductions, a lot of the deductions that are kept and that are permanent are not for C corporations. I mean, are for C corporations, but not for LLCs.
Yeah, you know.
But I think your key point, though, Alan, is that in each of these cases, there are the number of senators, 7 or 8 key senators that are swing on this, and each one has a problem that needs to be fixed, and there's a dollar amount attached to that.
Right.
So whether it's Senator Collins, who wants to take away the mandate, or it's Senator Johnson, who wants to fix this problem with small business, each one of them has a significant price tag, and if they fix it for one, then they still have to stay underneath the cap, and so then they have to take away something for someone else.
Yeah.
The question is, how do they knit this together?
And they're going to have a real problem doing that. I don't have any doubt.
Well, I think they might do it. I think their bigger problem is, how do they do it fast enough so that average Americans don't come to realize how bad this is for them. Mm-hmm. Because this is bad for small business, but it's really bad for individuals.
Don't you think that's starting to happen, though? We're seeing in the polls that that there's a negativity to this. I mean, they have to do it pretty quick.
But I think that's exactly
to
Teresa's
They have point. To do it. Yeah. They have to come back next week. They are only 12. This is the math that I don't understand. There's 12 legislative days left in the year. And they say they want to do this before the end of the year. But along with doing this, they also have to pass the budget bills, because remember the deal that Trump struck with Senator Schumer and Congresswoman Pelosi to basically kick the can down the road when they came up against the October 1st budget deadlines and Child Health Plus and all these other programs that were expiring. So they did the extension. Well, they didn't do the extension for Child Health Plus, but for the budget. Well, that's extended to December 8th. But they still have to pass a budget. They have to raise the debt limit. They have to deal with the flood insurance program and four or five other things. And there's 12 legislative days.
And by the way, there does seem to be a general agreement among all those people, including Susan Collins and others, that they would be willing to vote for the tax bill. In other words, it isn't a blanket, no, we're not voting for this stupid bill.
Right.
We're not until they change this, this, and this. So I'm thinking that there's a very good chance we're going to see a tax bill passed.
Right.
Mike Spain, tell me when you're ready to speak on this issue.
Oh.
Well, first of all, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
We're
sorry for my tardiness.
Well, sorry that you had trouble.
I'm just so glad I didn't have to answer the question on what the pass-through means.
I mean, that's what my company is, but I can't define it. I should know it, but I've been struggling with the nuances. That's where I don't know where the lines are drawn.
It has to do with how it's going to affect large companies, billionaire companies like Trump's organization, and give them essentially some of the advantages that small businesses have, and that allows them to evade enormous amounts of paying taxes. Estimates are that using the 2005 one page of a tax return from Trump, that his family and his businesses will benefit by $1 billion by this tax bill. But I was going to say, I agree with Alan. I think everybody has their little thing they want in it. You know, Susan Collins has some concerns. And what you're going to end up with is a very mishmash tax bill that puts back in a whole bunch of things, but in the end, probably will still give the corporations and the wealthy a very big tax break.
But when you say, Mike, that she has some concerns, it ain't just a little concern.
What
they've tried to do is to put the stuff through the health.
Right. They're basically trying to repeal Obamacare or kill it by this bill by taking away the mandate that people have health insurance. And that would severely cut the stability of an already unstable bill. Well, however, I did read last week that people are signing up for the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah. In record numbers,
which is in defiance of the fact that they're not even advertising it. Maybe it's all the attention about
it. Maybe that's what it needed.
Yeah, it was the publicity about it, not the government-funded programs to encourage people to sign up. But Susan Collins has problems. A senator from Wisconsin, Johnson, has problems. Murkowski in Alaska has problems.
She sounded like she was going to vote for it.
Right, because they were going to give her some relief on oil drilling in some protected areas of Alaska.
Well, she was
a
last-minute
really
holdout last time, too,
right.
at least on the health bill.
There just may be enough to push this on.
But then what about the deficit hawks? What about Corker and McCain?
Yeah, right.
There are all of these obvious taxes or these problems that it has for average working families. I mean, the new Joint Tax Committee, which is nonpartisan, straight analysis, they put out a new analysis on Friday that shows that if you make $75,000 to $100,000 a year, you pretty much break even. Everybody who makes less than that, their taxes are going to go up. And then the people who make more than that, their taxes, they're going to get the tax cuts.
So if I can, because we only have a second before we have to go to the break, but from Dave, High Oil, a pass-through, in quotes, is an entity that is organized one way and does not pay taxes as that entity, but instead pay on the owner's 1040. I guess we knew that. So a subchapter S-Corp, a partnership, or an LLC all pay at the owner's tax rate.
That's how I do it.
My small business is an S-corporation. I file a 1120S, and then the net income or loss falls on to my own return. S-corps are limited to size, so GE cannot avail themselves to this form of organization, and I would need to change if I grew too much.
As opposed to a C-corp, which is the formation.
But again, that's only 5% of the businesses, right?
Right.
You know what I said? Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about
this
some more, and we will also talk about how Democrats are seeing this, that and more after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning. It is Monday. Not Tuesday yet. It's Monday. I have a thing right here. This is Tuesday,
but I
shouldn't have read that. Good morning and welcome. Alan Chartok is here. Mike Spain, Teresa Bourgeois, and we welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Is that a letter?
No, this is my introduction to David Woolner, who I just interviewed from 8 to 9 about his...
You want to read it?
About his extraordinary book about...
It's like two pages, single-spaced.
The Last 100 Days of FDR. Great book.
Excellent. Great. Okay, so let's... I wanted to talk to you as we were talking about the tax plan, and there is an article... in the Washington Post about Democrats see backlash over Republicans' tax bill as a key to winning in the suburbs. Is this a real thing or is this much ado about nothing? I asked the political scientists in the room as well as our other panelists. For decades, the battle lines in New England's most politically conservative state were clear. Republican ran on tax cuts. Democrats ran on targeted tax credits. Both parties kept New Hampshire free of a state income or sales tax, blurring some distinctions for suburban voters. Then came the Republican tax plan in Congress. So the question is, Democrats and obviously what we've been talking about, some crucial Republicans, have issues with this Senate GOP plan. What will the long-term implications be when it comes, even if it gets passed, for Democrats in the suburbs where they have been having problems in the past?
Well, that's a heck of a question. We did see the recent by-elections showing huge gains for the Democrats in these suburban areas. We saw, for example, Rob Astorino, a Republican in Democratic Westchester, getting his behind kicked, and other things like that. So, Joe, your question is a good and profound one, as usual. You know, my bet.
I just stole it from the Washington Post.
Well, you
ahead.
Did well. knowing where to, as Pete Seeger once put it, or maybe it was Woody Guthrie.
You plagiarism, just have to attribute it, right?
plagiarism is endemic to all mankind. And
he stole that from one of those guys.
Yeah. Right. So. I think the Democrats think they're onto something here. When you started just reading what the differences were between, you know, one type of tax cut and another, I have to say, I don't think most people are going to be on that. But the nature of propaganda has always been you say it, then you say it again, and you say it again, and you say it again. Tax bill, say the Democrats. Bad. Why? Rich. It helps the rich. It doesn't help the poor. Let me reiterate. Tax bill. Bad, they are saying. Yes, what?
But there's actually content here. I mean, the problem with the Republicans' rhetoric, if you listen to Paul Ryan, Speaker Ryan, if you listen to the majority leader and the GOP talking points, it's, you know, this is a tax bill that's going to help the middle class and the working class. But in fact, that's not what it does.
Right.
And they're saying it over and over. But at some point, people are going to realize that's true. I mean, this is a tax bill that gives a tax break to people who own private planes. But it takes away a tax deduction for teachers who buy school supplies and get to deduct a small amount from their school supplies.
Or from college students who take out a ton of student loans.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
it has a tax break. If you're a corporation and you move your corporation somewhere else, including overseas, you get to write off your moving expenses under the Republican tax plan.
But
if you're the individual who lost your job because the company closed and you need to move somewhere else to get a job, your moving expenses are no longer deductible as an individual.
The real question is whether a lot of that will have had its impact if this tax bill were to pass. Will it have had its impact by the 2018 midterm elections? They say people won't really begin to feel it until early 2019 when they're filling out their tax forms and saying, you know, and they're going to have the stunning realization that some of the things that they traditionally had deducted, like the home mortgage tax. You know, their property taxes for their high tax community in suburban New York, or et cetera, or schools.
Well, mortgage. Wait a second. Mortgage interest is still
right. They're going to limit it to, you know, they're still negotiating that now. Now, if you have
$500,000,
yeah. So if you have but you know, if you live in Long Island or Westchester, you might have a house that's over that, and you're
even in Albany.
Yeah, I mean, there's houses that way here, but I mean, I think a lot of middle class families have to contend with that. Okay. Will it kick in though by 2018?
So if the tax plan, so let's talk about more immediate impacts. Yeah. If the tax plan does not pass, then what happens to the stock market? And is that a more immediate concern?
The stock market is not the economy. Just remember that. They're parallel, but they're not.
I know
the same
thing.
Well, I think
and many people know that.
But if
there
read
is a
headlines,
perception.
Right, read headlines. Well, the Dow Jones Industrial Average
is
crashed
tanking.
Today.
Right,
right.
Well, you know.
But it's going to, it's a bubble that's going to bust either way.
Sooner or later.
Either
what
way.
What goes up must come down.
But if it busts after, it'll be blamed on the Democrats. But it's going to bust either way, right?
I think it's too sophisticated or contrived an argument that it'll be the Democrats'
fault. It's a cyclical thing.
Yeah.
It's going to come down.
Okay, so Robert says, Bob from Albany says, the average $100,000 plus earning family may see a tax cut, but that's a lot less likely for those living in high tax states like New York. Loss of deductions for property and state and local taxes will cost far more than doubling the personal deduction and a modest reduction in the federal tax rate. Now, let me just say, Bob, and I certainly think you're right, and we know you're right. The problem with this thinking is that it's not that you know it or that I know it. It's that people who are going to be affected by it know it. And that's why the Democrats have a huge, task before them. They've got to make that case so that before you sit down with your accountant or before you try to do it, you realize you're at risk. Your money is at risk.
And just like the health bill, there is an argument, as the Democrats and others say, for some changes in the tax code to make it more simple and more equitable. It's just that this bill doesn't do that. This is a giveaway because
right.
their theory is that if we have these deep tax cuts for corporations, that will unleash their investments.
Right, and there'll be more jobs.
Jobs
will be more competitive,
growth.
So they'll have to raise wages. That's a pipe dream. That is
it hasn't
behind
worked.
This.
It hasn't worked.
It hasn't worked.
They've tried it.
It hasn't worked.
You even used your pipe dream voice when you were doing it.
Right.
And yet everybody has to be taking a look at how it will affect them. Dave says, please comment on the proposal to make grad student tuition waivers taxable.
It's crazy.
In other words, if I went to NYU, which I did, and I got a tuition waiver, now they want me to
pay
taxes
on that. That's income there, Alan. You have to pay taxes.
In my opinion, increasing the challenge to attain graduate degrees does not help our global competitiveness. Thank you. And that's from Dave.
That's so important because not only will they be cutting funding for research, but if you make it harder to do graduate programs and postdocs, you're cutting into our innovation economy. It's outrageous.
Right. It should be pointed out that economists make predictions and people project what's going to happen when you change tax policy. It came. Tell me. I mean, you were in Washington,
I was in Washington.
The 90s. Yeah. I mean, it came as somewhat of a surprise when the budget actually had a surplus at the end of the Clinton administration. Isn't that right? I mean, that wasn't completely tracked and predicted. It had a lot to do with the bubble of the digital economy, you know, the new economy.
The tech bubble.
The tech bubble, right, which did burst.
And investing in science and innovation and technology and education.
Absolutely, but it wasn't for certain that was going to happen. When Clinton left office, he left a budget surplus. That was only 17 years ago. And look at the mess we're in. And we're talking about this budget bill allows a budget deficit of no more than $1.5 trillion, even though some are projecting it'll be $2.25 trillion. Some objective think tanks are saying that.
Did you mean $150 trillion? Am I wrong on that?
Trillion. $1.5 trillion is what the bill will allow. And after that, if the budget deficit is so big, they're going to have to cut something to keep it and to manage the deficit after that. And what are they going to cut?
Well, that's exactly the critical point, is that it's not only the effect of these tax breaks, but it's also within a couple of months, it's going to explode the deficits. And so then they're going to need to cut deeply into programs. They're going to cut more education programs.
Sure.
They're going to cut transport. They're not going to be able to do
Medicaid. How about Medicaid?
Medicaid.
You think
they're
going to cut
entitlements.
How about Social Security? May that get cut?
We know how this is going to turn out if they follow this path, because Reagan did this. And I was there in the 80s also when the Reagan tax cuts were passed. And there's a lot of revision in history on this. But what happened immediately is it exploded the deficits, and it caused all sorts of social problems.
And it's
problems.
Been documented that that was a transfer of wealth.
Enormous transfer.
From the middle class to the upper class. And we're watching it happen all over again.
And they didn't reinvest it back into the economy. And it grew this economic disparity. And it's this economic inequality, I think, is what's driving a lot of the angst that got Trump elected.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will talk about other issues. We will move on. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Sorry, that was so
cool. Wow, you're doing a little miming there, Mike. I like it.
Did you play in the band in high
school? I wish I knew how to play the trumpet like that.
Mike Spade is here. He's from the Times Union. Teresa Bourgeois is here.
Our communications consultant. And trumpet player Alan Shawtuck.
Yes. And,
do you actually play the real trumpet?
Indeed.
What was the name of your band?
The Satellites. The Satellites. Music Out of This World.
Music Out of This World. That's right. And you were how old?
Very old.
Yeah, okay.
76.
No. How old were you when you played in the... I know how old you are now.
You
remind me of that every day. I want to know what you...
I was like 17 through graduate school.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's fun.
You're just a kid, Alan, compared to Robert Mugabe. But anyways.
Yeah, oh, true. Hey, so what's up with him? Let's talk about that for a second. That is an excellent transition, Mike. Right, I thank you very much. Kudos for that. Try to keep the show on track, are you? Robert Mugabe, in a speech to Zimbabwe, refuses to say if he will resign. Now, this comes after it was pretty much reported that he was gone, right? And then he makes a speech. He has ruled Zimbabwe with an iron grip until the military placed him under house arrest last week. He shocked the nation on Sunday night by refusing to say whether he would resign. Many political observers had been expecting Mr. Mugabe to step down as president after nearly 40 years in power, but the embattled president gave a 20-minute televised speech that acknowledged problems in the nation, and he vowed to soldier on. So, taking one from the Roy Moore playbook, just keep on going.
Well, it's clear that there's a game of chicken going on here between the people who want to depose him, the military people, and Mugabe, and his, more importantly, his wife of several decades less than he.
Grace Mugabe.
Yeah, and who do have a tremendous amount of skin in the game, and that the corruption problems are terrible and all the rest. There are many of us who think, okay, so they replace him, but they'll be the next corrupter. We'll come on next. But clearly they're worried about him. They are worried that he can cause trouble. So they're trying to get him to do it gracefully, and they're giving him time limits that say, if you don't do it by this
midday,
20th
of November, the chief whip was ordered to issue proceedings for the removal of the president.
Yes. So, and they want to do it because they want to do it legally as opposed to coup
d'etat.
By military.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
No, you know, I remember back when I was in grade school, this was Southern Rhodesia, right? And then it broke its independence, and it was sort of in a revolt state all the way to 1980, and then Zimbabwe formed in 1980, and he was their president. He was, you know, highly regarded, but corruption took over. Now at age 93, it turns out that he's just been pouring money to family members and political allies. His wife is, his much younger wife has enormous political power. Now they're stripping both he and his wife of the party power that they have. It seems like what you're saying, Alan, exactly right on, is that they're trying to have a peaceful transition, a legal transition. They don't want to call it a coup. They call it sort of a, they have some kind of euphemism for it. But basically, the military is trying to come over, trying to oversee a peaceful transition. They're trying to bring back this vice president who they, Mugabe, had fired back into power, and perhaps let him take over. And it looks like, so far, so good. I mean, he's resisting, but it would be a good thing if a peaceful transition could happen that would stabilize that country and that region of Africa.
And one other thing here, and that is when you read about their need for a peaceful transition, you better believe that there are some of the Western democracies that are putting pressure on them to do it legally as opposed to strongman.
What interests me most about this is actually the role of China in the country and possibly in this change in government. So the army commander who has led this change in government, two days prior, he had returned from a meeting in China with the high-level meeting with various key Chinese military and other officials. China is the largest investor in Zimbabwe. They have built their military facilities. They built their military college. They have built their supercomputer, invested heavily in higher education, in hospitals around the country. They are the lead investor in their key sources of power, and obviously very interested in their rare earths and other things. And so it's intriguing to me that this Constantino Chiwanga, I'm not sure if I'm saying his name correctly, but the army leader of this, we'll call it a transition, not a coup for now, because that's what people are calling it, just prior to taking this action, returned from a few days of meetings in China. Now, did that result in them directing him to do this or getting a nod of approval to do this? Who knows? But China, this is another place in the world where China has tremendous influence. And, you know, as I've said before, they're playing three-dimensional chess around the world, and Donald Trump is playing solitaire. And this is another example of
that.
Yeah,
but, I mean, that's very incisive, I think. But obviously, China also has to figure that when they do something like that, they want to be on the right side. Right? I mean, the right side.
The one that wins.
Well, no, it's not only the one that wins, but also getting this guy, this dictator, out of there. Transition
without violence to a different day.
Do they have a dictatorship? Yes, they do.
But they want other people to be stable. Right?
Well, yeah. And so they're saying, do it the right way. We have a democracy here. They're saying, of course, they don't. In which, you know, the we are elected by the right people to go forward, and we have limited terms and all the rest of it.
Let's go to some letters before we have to go to a break at the top of the hour.
This is a very interesting one. Says Debbie. As a taxpayer, how do I contact my congressman that I disagree with this plan when my emails are not read for months by the congressman, which will be too late? How is the common man supposed to voice our opinions? And that's from Debbie. Now, let me just say, I believe on Vox Pop today, is it today? That and I know that James, who produces the program, will come in. We'll have John Faso. Huh?
Isn't today Medical Monday?
Oh, today's Medical Monday, yes. And tomorrow is John Faso on Tuesday. Thank you, Joe. That's the second
save of the day. Yeah. And actually,
it's a holiday weekend.
Actually, with John Faso will be Garrison Keillor, so it'll be a hell of a show. Faso's tomorrow.
Tomorrow, right.
Yeah, Faso's tomorrow. So good question.
So you'd call 1-800-348-2551.
Now, my understanding of this, and Teresa, I'm going to, since you have worked on the Hill for so long, but I have heard that calling beats emailing. Yes?
Yeah.
Yeah, and getting out a piece of paper and writing a letter, putting a stamp on it and mailing it trumps everything else. But yes, call. Because when you call, they register that call, and they register what you've said one way or the other. And every office that I know of, at the end of the day, They do a tally of who called and what side they were on, and they pay attention to that. But also, after you're done calling, pick up a piece of paper, you know, type something out.
Snail mail?
Surface mail.
Oh, don't say that. We'll get letters.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Surface That's okay. Oh, you should know better.
My apologies to Union. All of those at the U.S. Postal Service.
Surface mail. Send it to the, you know, send it to your local regional office. In, you know, if you don't want to send it to Washington, send it to your local regional office. They'll open it. They will record it, and then it'll get put into the system.
Now, email gets routed to interns usually or something like that?
Well, it all gets routed to, I mean, my first job was to work for a congressman part-time answering mail because they had such a backlog of mail. It was fascinating.
Who was the congressman?
Congressman Don Albosta. He was a Democrat from Northern Michigan. And I held a seat that had been held by a Republican for 36 years. He won that seat and held it for three terms.
Well, it's interesting because when I was an intern, that was my job also, was opening the mail and recording it. But I remember being in the hall one day when somebody came out of an office and said, one of the congressmen said, they're killing me on this bill. And it wasn't that many letters that they had gotten. So they count for a lot. You're exactly right.
They pay attention to letters.
Well, the thing they pay most attention to, evidently, is the public coming out to meetings. And that's why a lot of them don't have public meetings.
Right.
And you know, you got to hand it to Congressman Faso for coming on to Vox Pop. Is it tomorrow, you said?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, and hearing his constituents call in and taking, you know, taking some knocks.
Well, they're going to ask him tough questions.
Yeah. Right.
Well, and they're also going to ask him, why doesn't he do it in a public setting?
Why won't he do a town meeting? Because some people are upset that he won't do a town meeting. They'll say he'll do these things, but not a town meeting.
Well, they're a little more protected.
And his position is going to be, I don't want to get yelled at.
And he's not the only one. Congresswoman Claudia Tenney, does she do town meetings yet? I know she hadn't been doing them. And all over the country, the Republicans. I mean, what are they going to do? I'm a teacher. How come you're taking away my tax deduction? I'm a student. How come you're taking away my tax deduction?
I'm not. Boo!
I'm not. This is going to help you. Because I'm giving you a higher, you know.
Well, John Faso is opposed to the bill, to the tax bill. He apparently they don't need his vote, They did not need his vote.
Congresswoman Tenney.
Get out of jail free card.
Congresswoman Tenney voted for it.
Right, yeah.
And
some others in New York State.
Collins from
Western New York.
But they must have an algorithm which allows them to decide who gets off the hook and who's in the tank.
Well, what it says to me is that they're worried about the Faso seat. That's what it says to me, the Congressman Faso seat.
Our floor manager is asking us to wrap it up, so I will do that now.
His football team won yesterday or something.
The Giants, so excited? The Giants won, yes.
We'll
take a break.
Denying their chance for the best draft pick, anyway.
We'll take a break. We'll be right back after Ray gives us some news. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok is here. Teresa Bourgeois is with us, and Mike Spain is back. He was gone last week. He's here this week because you have a new grandchild.
That's
we congratulate you on your newest grandchild. You were
To Denver, right?
Yeah.
Our newest grandchild is Lincoln Spain, a very honest name.
That is great. Well, congratulations.
He's doing great. Yeah, we had a great time out there visiting him and getting to know him. And
good for you.
Well, that's terrific. I did watch Lincoln on
HBO.
On HBO, yes. Mm-hmm. Today. Mm-hmm. What a film.
Well,
boy, that's fantastic.
I'm noticing everywhere I go, there's things named for my grandson.
It's really good.
Everybody always agrees he's the number one, the greatest American president.
Yeah, no, it's a great, he was a great president, and that was a great motion picture.
And I had the pleasure of meeting your granddaughter.
That was my oldest granddaughter you met a couple weeks ago, right?
She
went to see the forum on All the President's Men. She read the book, and so we brought her to the forum.
How old is she?
13.
Well, congratulations.
Why, thanks so much.
On the new family member.
And
very productive.
It is always good to hear good news. Yes, absolutely. All right. So Mike made a great transition earlier. I'll make a crappy one now. Charles Manson is dead.
Yeah,
Charlie Manson is dead.
Nobody's crying a tear for that one. Helter Skelter. That's
Helter Skelter, 1969, of course, and the Manson murders. And Wow. So he was 83 years old. He was obviously sent to prison for life for brutally murdering seven people in 1969, including the actress Sharon Tate. He was, well, he is, you know, we look at this case this morning, and I think most of us growing up with this always remember, sort of were reminded of it. I think it was 23 times or whatever that he went up for bail. Is that right? Something like that. And
not bail, see, parole.
Thank you.
Yeah. 2-1.
Yeah. All the time. 2-1. I thought you meant the vote in court. Now
yeah,
I understand what you're talking about.
He's
yeah, thank you.
Got the
correct yeah, that's right. So there you go. Became one of the most notorious killers of the 20th century after his followers brutally murdered seven people in 1969. 83 years old. It was a weird weekend because we heard that he was taken to the hospital, and then it was sort
then
of shrouded in secrecy.
Yeah,
they were hinting he was done.
Yeah,
there was a hint that he was.
But I find it amazing that he lived in a prison till age 83. I mean, it must really grate on you, you know. So he, you know, no, like I said before, nobody is shedding a tear on the death. It just reminds you of that period where cults were really beginning to catch on. You know, it wasn't long after that, maybe in the 80s, that Jim Jones had his cult, and there were other cults that were all based on weird, wacky, violent things.
Horrible racist cult he had.
Yeah. Yeah, his was awful.
Mr. Manson was, I'm reading from the New York Times. Mr. Manson was a semi-literate, habitual criminal and failed musician before he came to irrevocable attention in the late 1960s as the wild-eyed leader of the Manson family, a murderous band of young drifters in California, convicted of 9 murders in all. Mr. Manson was known in particular for the 7 brutal killings collectively known as the Tate LaBianca murders, committed by his followers on 2 consecutive August nights in 1969.
Yeah, and you know, one of the followers of Manson made an assassination attempt on Gerald Ford, President Ford
that.
In California.
Squeaky Fromm.
Lynette Squeaky Fromm, yeah.
Yeah.
And the weird thing was, within 2 weeks, he went back to California, and he was... there was another attempt by somebody else. I mean, it was the weirdest time. It just reminds you of how weird the 60s and the 70s and the 80s were. Well, they're going to say that in about 20 years teens.
This is a pretty high-level weird year.
We're having problems right now. With
there's a level of weirdness.
Yeah,
too,
we got some weird now. Let's go to a couple letters, and then we'll move on. I want to talk about you know, what would it be? Would it be a Monday without talking about a presidential weekend tweet? No. So let's do letters, then we'll talk about the Trump tweet about UCLA students.
Oh, yeah, okay. Dear Pennell, I am very frustrated by the manner in which the Democrats are addressing the Republican tax plan. They keep reverting to their mantra, a tax cut for the wealthy, while avoiding the specifics, some of which Teresa mentioned. And then there's some specifics, and that's from Ann of Poughkeepsie. Well, Ann, in the great tradition of this program, I don't agree with you. I think you guys just say it again and again and again, and I think that's how, you know, tax cuts for the wealthy, and I think that's what most Americans will understand.
And I think overall, because the details keep changing.
Yeah.
So today the tax break is in for the airplane, you know, that'll probably stand, but those change. But overall, the theme of it is correct, which is it's shifting tremendous wealth. We already have tremendous income inequality, and it will expand that income inequality by shifting tremendous wealth to the wealthy and to corporations. With their idea is that they will then, it will benefit the workers, and there's no evidence that that will happen.
Well, and there's no evidence that the wealthy haven't been doing really well for the last 10 years since the economic failure. They have prevailed, and they have thrived since 2008's crash, and I'm not sure why they need this benefit. And everybody else has been kind of on hold or struggling in
there's always period. A bigger yacht.
Well, that's why this group, and I misstated it the other day, but this group called Responsible Wealth, more than 400 millionaires and billionaires have jointly signed a letter to the Congress and to the President Trump saying that they disagree with this approach, that it's not in their economic interest, that say, don't raise taxes on me. They say, don't do anything.
Don't cut my taxes, right?
Don't cut my taxes. Thank you. Don't cut my taxes.
Because two to they one said, to one. Yeah.
I did it again. But no. Their core thing is increasing income inequality is bad. And that you need to have these investments to drive the economy, and you won't be able to have investments in science and education and the workforce if you move the Republican tax
package. You were talking before
these are wealthy
about,
people say
about how China is investing in various countries around the globe, like Zimbabwe, and we're withdrawing. I mean, we're not even investing in our own future, in our own research and development, and we're not going to be the hub that we have been traditionally for a higher education if we don't do something to make it easier and better for students to learn.
And who's going to own our debt? More of our debt. China already holds a lot
of our
debt.
Student debt. Yeah.
And you expand that debt, and so China will have more of a grip on us and the Saudis and others. It's dangerous.
I'm going to say something that is probably just wrong, which would make me have three wrong things this morning. But I think that the point here is that we're going to get ourselves into terrible inflationary trouble. Mm-hmm. In other words, all I know is I keep hearing there's no inflation. There's no inflation. But I go and I buy a cup of coffee. What's it? It's almost $5 in some of these places now. That's a lot of money. And that just keeps happening with breakfast. Breakfast, $10 for some scrambled eggs and bacon. That's a lot of money, isn't it, Mike?
It used to be you could get a scrambled three eggs and toast for 79 cents at a place in Water Valley. But that's been a while.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, yeah, there you go. Okay, Paul says...
Thank you, Mike.
My son is one of the many graduate students who gets whacked by the Republicans who want to count his tuition benefit as income. He's paid a starvation-level stipend but receives free tuition when he gets his PhD. He figures the change would hit him for about $6,000. How is this right? Well, here's what my son Jonas would say. That ain't right.
Well, so get out a piece of paper and a pen and type up a letter to your member of Congress and your senator and then call and then write a letter to the editor and just help educate people. I mean, it worked around healthcare. People spoke out and it made a difference. I don't sense that people are speaking out as much about this.
What happens, other than our speculation that the stock market might take a hit, but what happens if this tax bill does not pass and everything just continues the way it is, what will happen? I mean,
a lot of people on K Street will be very happy. I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
A lot of the lobbyists.
What about a lot of people? Yeah. Throughout America.
Yeah. Oh, them.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I'm all for a tax revision as long as it's
done fairly.
The Chartakian principles.
Yes.
Right. And what you would hope would happen, which you'd hoped happen with health care, is that then they'd realize, okay, let's take a bipartisan approach to this and work out a bipartisan fix.
They don't want to do that.
Right. But tax policy is hard. Remember the last major tax policy change, a year and a half, hearings.
And that still resulted in a transfer of wealth from the middle class to the wealthy.
Okay. So Linda says, please bring to listeners' attention what happens to Medicare after the new tax bill passes. Well, I do know there are going to be consequences.
Well, there's a provision in there right now which they say that if, in fact, they don't fix this, it will immediately trigger a deep cut in Medicare. But some say now that they're going to try to close that problem. But right now, there's a provision in the Senate bill that if they don't fix it, it triggers an automatic and deep cut in Medicare. Even if they do fix that, you still are going to explode the deficits. And once you explode the deficits, then they're going to say, we have to figure out a way to pay for it. So 6 months from now, I can guarantee you they're going to go after entitlements.
Ted says, the Republican tax plan represents nothing less than the corporate takeover of the American government.
I thought that had happened.
That's what I was going to say.
But I keep thinking about the people in the Trump rallies who he said, you know, he was on their side. And we said, no, he's not. And this is just proof positive.
You said that in 6 months, if they don't fix Medicare, you're going to see more attempts to cut entitlements. I think that will happen after the midterm elections. I think they'll hold off. They're smart enough not to let the electorate feel the brunt of whatever happens until after 2018.
Let's try to remember that this is still the first year in for a 4-year term. Can you imagine?
Yeah,
it's exhausting.
Okay, and Jules says, and don't forget, globalization and the loss of American jobs has substantially increased since the Reagan era, making the possibility of trickle down less than zero. And Lorraine Lola says, as a retiree over 65, my standard deduction got a bump up from the regular standard deduction. Would seniors still get such a bump up? If not, the new standard deduction will likely not be enough to cover the loss of state and property taxes. I think that's a good point. It won't.
So those are the letters we have right now. Panel at WAMC.org. I want to get to a couple of topics before we wrap up for the day.
No.
There was an article in the Washington Post this morning about the White House struggling to explain the president's silence on Roy Moore and the allegations, while he has gone after Al Franken, and although he seems seems to be ignoring allegations about himself and about Roy Moore. Meanwhile, we hear this morning that Kellyanne Conway goes on Fox News and says that, quote, they want the votes in the Senate. The White House could support Roy Moore, saying they want the votes in the Senate to get this tax bill through. This is a departure from what Kellyanne Conway has previously said, saying there is no Senate seat worth more than a child. And yet now saying that they want the votes in the Senate to get the tax bill through and they could support Roy Moore, although she did make it clear that the president has no plans to campaign for Moore in Alabama.
This well, in echoes, a way he has. In a way he has, because when he says it's up to the people of Alabama, that's what he's talking about.
But they're getting closer now to what the governor of the state said, which is that we need to keep the Republican majority in place, and to do that, you should vote for Roy Moore.
Yeah, Kellyanne Conway.
Oh,
actually,
my God.
Right. She was being honest. She says, in spite of all the flaws and apparent acknowledgement by their refusal to comment on it and his refusal to go to the state, in spite of all that, we need his vote, even if he is a predator who went after teenagers, even if there's compelling evidence and increasing evidence every day. Vote for him because we need to get the tax bill through. I'm sorry. That's what she basically said.
No. The newspapers
three
major newspapers have come out against you.
Well, and the clergy, thank God, finally have come out.
Some clergy,
clergy, but there is a large contingent in the state who have come out as well. And the newspapers, as you mentioned, have helped.
I think only two newspapers endorsed Trump in 2018.
That's right, and they're endorsing the Democratic.
Yeah, here you got a Democrat who's a federal prosecutor who went after KKK people, and he might not win.
Well, and to his credit, he was there were lots of pictures of him with African American surrounding him, which is he's uncompromising about this.
I thought too it was interesting that clergy who did speak up talked about not only the issues of his abuse of women, but overall, his policy approach.
Oh, they said he was a repugnant person and candidate prior to these allegations.
Right. That if you are on to be on the side of children and working families, he's not the. Even if you can put aside the issues of the way he treated young women, he's still not your candidate. And I thought that was very important. I also thought it was interesting that over the weekend, a number of Republican operatives said, for the Republicans, the best thing is that the Democrat wins, because if Moore does win, then there's going to be this ethics investigation and a whole, it's going to go on and on all through the 2018 election, and every candidate's going to be asked what
do you
think about
Moore. So for strategic reasons, that's
well, it is interesting that we're back to Moore and that Franken is diminishing in attention.
I don't think you can compare what the—
Well, I agree with you, and I'm getting a ton of mail about that. Nevertheless, it is interesting to me how the news cycle works.
Well, I think the Franken thing brings up the whole issue between a whole lifestyle, a whole life of mistakes, and can someone have made a grotesque mistake like Al Franken did, and get past it. And it's an interesting discussion we could go on for an hour on.
And pursuing children, I think, is a category of itself. Yeah. I think if you are a mid-30s man,
hanging around
and
malls,
you hang
going
around
after
malls
teenagers.
And you go after 14-year-olds, that puts you in a whole separate category.
Well, I thought Judith Eng said it correctly when she said on Friday that if you're not allowed into the local shopping mall and you're seen as
that.
A threat, maybe not the guy for the United States right. Senate. Just
and even Republican Lindsey Graham says, you know, when you can't. You're on the no-fly zone in a shopping mall. You probably don't belong in the Senate.
And the Franken story has continued. There, he has said over the weekend, a staffer has said that he continues to stay in his seat. And meanwhile, another woman has come forward and said that she was touched inappropriately. So we'll see how that story goes on over the next few days as well. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody who checked in. And we welcome your letters always. Panel at WAMC.org. Teresa, thank you very much. We'll see you on Wednesday.
Looking forward to it, day before Turkey Day.
Thank you. Mike, we'll see you tomorrow.
That's right. Normal
Excellent.
Day. Normal Tuesday.
Thank you very much. And Alan, we'll see you as well. We'll be right back after this.